on today's show.
If we can get the theology right, then the missiology will flow from that, and it will be a correct missiology. It will be Israel is a lost people group. They are here on our shores, and it's an amazing providence that they're here on our shores. So what are we, the church, the Gentile church, indebted to the Jewish people? What are we doing to reach our Jewish neighbors? And I often say they, you know, this book is Jewish, the man is Jewish, the message is Jewish, the first missionaries were Jewish. So what are we doing? Are we simply saying, thank you very much, let's go and evangelize the rest of the world? Or are we not realizing the debt and the duty to bring the gospel back to those that brought it to us?
Stay tuned. Greetings and welcome to the Missions Podcast, the show that explores your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Communications and Engagement for ABWE, flying solo here today, and we are in for quite the ride as we discuss an issue of great contemporary concern. Before we introduce our guests here, who I'm honored to call friends, first, we want to let you know, as always, the things that every podcast asks you to do, you're welcome to do those things to bless this show as well. Share it with a friend, leave it a positive rating and a 5-star review. But more so than that, don't forget that we've launched our premium content portal, and you can get access to that at missionspodcast.com/premium, including a bonus segment to today's episode where we'll get more into some of the contemporary controversy and what to do about it. But not only that, if you're an Apple Podcast listener, and we know that about 75-80% of you are, we are working on building out our premium membership directly within the Apple Podcast app to make it much easier for you to access the content that you want from the app that you're used to using. So keep your eyes peeled for that. To all of you who've partnered with the ministry so far, we're so grateful for your support. And with those housekeeping items out of the way, let me introduce our esteemed guests here first. And maybe I'll introduce them in reverse order. Stephen would normally get the introduction first, but let me just say Greg is the one that I connected with first here. Greg and I are our friends on X. I almost said Twitter, but it's X now. We're X friends. Not EX, but we're friends on the app formerly known as Twitter or X. And that's where real lifelong friendships are forged.
That's right.
And that's the only thing that happens on X is the forming of true friendships. Greg is the pastor at Trinity Baptist Church. You're in Kansas. What town in Kansas, brother?
Wamego, Kansas is the name
of it. Wamego, Kansas. And right smack dab in the middle of nowhere. Hope you're not offended by my saying that, but I could not find it on a map. And I will just be upfront and admit that. But you're also the media director for an important ministry known as Christian Witness to Israel. And director of ministry for that important ministry is Stephen Atkinson, also joining us today. Gentlemen, both of you, that was probably the worst introduction you've ever received. And go ahead and just give me 30 seconds more of what I missed in both of those sloppy bios.
Well, I'll go first, I suppose. I think it was perfectly fine because it was like the only introduction I've ever received, maybe. But I appreciate it. Yeah, I am the pastor here at Trinity Baptist Church. I've been here for about 2 years. It is in the middle of nowhere, but it's close to Manhattan and Kansas State University. So if you're familiar that area of the country, then you'll know sort of where Wamego is. We're about 15 minutes to the east of that. I've been working with Christian Witness to Israel now for, since... one thing you did leave out in our bio is that I am the son-in-law of Stephen Atkinson, who is positioned next to me on the
screen. I wasn't going to say it if you didn't say it. So.
Yeah, well, I will mention it. And, you know, a while back, I noted that the ministry could use a little bit of help in the website and media department. And I have been given some gifts by God that I was able to use and bring along the web development and some of those things. And so since then, it's just been a consistent little bit of time here and there, pushing what I can for the ministry, and I'm grateful to be able to do it.
Well, I may give my 30-second bio. I was a regular pastor for close to 20 years. I'm the Presbyterian in the room, so I'll give that one up front. They're praying for my ultimate sanctification and working for it, and I'm similarly praying for theirs, as I've lost all my family pretty much, nearly, not all, to the Baptists. But I am very grateful for Baptist friends. I have the same kind of affinity with many, many Baptists on 90-95% of all the issues. So it's good that we're together in that. So I was a regular pastor for 20 years, and for the past 20 years, I've been working with Christian Witness to Israel. As you can tell from my accent, at least whenever I get passionate, I'm not from these parts. I'm from across the pond. I was CWI Ireland, the deputation secretary for Ireland for 8 years. Mm. But 12 years ago, I moved over here to develop the work CWI North America. And we've been doing that and developing. We have a missionary in Pittsburgh. We have our media presence growing, and we have my wife as the accountant and admin par excellence, and she looks after all of those things. So in a sense, we are small, but we have large desires to stimulate and burden and assist local churches in their own Christian witness to Israel, the people, and particularly the people here in the USA. So I'm delighted to be here. I think this has been the most exciting part of my whole ministry life of 40 years. Mm. I preach, I teach, I go to seminaries, I go to the streets, which is way out of my comfort zone, with my missionary partner in Pittsburgh, who's a Jewish believer from Brooklyn. So he is straight in your face with his Jewish friends, whether it be in Pittsburgh or South Florida or New York or wherever. But I'm delighted to do this because I think it's really important in the United States for us to see the Jewish mission field that we have right here. And so I had 8 years in Ireland, which was enjoyable. I love to visit so many churches and tell of the mission. But here we're not simply telling of the mission, we're engaging the mission, and we're engaging the church in its own mission to our Jewish neighbors.
Well, thanks for that background. And Stephen, let me throw the first question your direction. Obviously, this is a timely issue. And if you've followed the news, you know, we're recording here. If you're listening to this after the fact, we're talking in the year 2024. I mean, we've had Palestinian, riots breaking out on college campuses, controversy on social media around certain figures that are either accused of being, you know, too pro-Semitic or too anti-Semitic. And it's a mess. And of course, all of this is in the wake of the horrific evil that happened to Israel in October of 2023 and the attacks carried out by Hamas at massacring a large number of individuals. So with all of that as a backdrop, though, when I look out, and maybe other listeners are in my boat, when I look out on the landscape of ministries to Israel, I see some that are of just a very sort of Zionistic ilk that are not necessarily evangelistic, but they're just saying, hey, Christians, Jews, whoever you are, we're all going to unite together for Israel. We're going to send them relief. And that's fine. And then I don't see a lot else happening, especially among our fellow, either theologically a conservative, particularly reformed leaning types of evangelicals. We don't hear that group talking much about Israel. And typically, when we do, it's what we don't believe about Israel. Well, here's what we don't think is unique about this nation in this scheme of God's plan for history. I hear less on the positive end about what needs to be done among this people group, which we're called to minister to all of these people groups, right? And so why do you think that is? What's the fundamental problem there? And how have you sought to answer that at CWI?
I think the fundamental problem in a lot of ministry is the theology behind the ministry. Because when I started coming over here, and I was, as I say, CWI Ireland for a time, but I started coming over here actually because my daughter went to Texas A&M University, I should say whoop, and she then eventually married an Aggie, a.k.a. Greg Kite. And we now have five little Aggies as our little grandchildren as well. So, in other words, I started coming over here way back in 2005, and I realized very soon the widespread confusion that there was. There were some who thought, let's just bless Israel we need to send money, we need to buy a tree for Israel, we need to send them $19 a month so that they can get fed and have matzah for Passover. That's the way we bless Israel. And I'm saying, no. There are others that have such a fascination for the land We have an interest in the land as an evangelistic mission field. I have colleagues there. I have dear friends known for 20 years there. So we're not discounting the importance of the land, but like the James Bond movie, I think it was, the world is not enough. The land is not enough. I think there are some who think the land is enough. And I have a great issue with those that place a greater emphasis on the land than the Lord. I have great issue with those that place a greater emphasis on the rapture than the Redeemer. And you can see that I'm a Presbyterian because I bring everything into alliteration.
the Baptists do that too. Don't worry.
Okay. Maybe you learned it from us. I don't know.
It wouldn't be the first thing.
No, I'll not go there. But I, again, just seeing the confusion that exists here, there are those that just want to bless Israel. Genesis 12:3, if you bless Israel, then you will be blessed. Your business will prosper. You know, buy this prayer shawl and you'll get a lot of money.
Stephen, it's a Zionistic prosperity gospel almost, right? It's like any good deed I do towards this people group, regardless of any other context, I'm going to expect a return from that. I mean, that's basically what you're describing.
It is. And it's, if I can say, I'm an American citizen. Okay, 5 years ago, your problems are my problems. I'm going to vote in a couple of months. So I'm saying this as someone who has chosen to be an American. As opposed to others that actually have just been born American. So I love this country. I believe it has the greatest potential for the kingdom than possibly any other country in the planet.
I'm sensing a big butt, brother.
I say this as a proud American citizen. There is a but. The but is that you guys are very good, we're very good at selling stuff. And we're a very much a capitalistic society, and we sell Jesus, and we sell the Israel issue. And the sad reality is that what Jewish people need above all else is not us to buy a tree or stand with Israel, but they need the Lord. The land is not enough. All the other stuff is not enough. They need the Lord. And so our ministry is very much an evangelistically focused ministry. So we don't, I think what you were saying, maybe in the, you know, as we were conversing prior, there's so many distractions. And I think, again, it goes back to the theological question. If we can get the theology right, then the missiology will flow from that, and it will be a correct missiology. It will be Israel is a lost people group. They are here on our shores, and it's an amazing providence that they're here on our shores. So what are we, the church, the Gentile church, indebted to the Jewish people? What are we doing to reach our Jewish neighbors? And I often say this book is Jewish, the man is Jewish, the message is Jewish, the first missionaries were Jewish, and they brought it to us. So what are we doing? Are we simply saying, thank you very much, let's go and evangelize the rest of the world? Or are we not realizing the debt and the duty to bring the gospel back to those that brought it to us? So I think it's a forgotten mission field, and it will demand a theological engagement. And I do that, as I say, at seminary level, at pulpit level. I preach, I drive 40,000 miles a year all over the country. And if any of your listeners want to hear me or hear this strange Irishman that lives in Arkansas and talks about Israel from a Reformed perspective, if you want to hear that confused identity, then please give me a shout and I'll be there in a heartbeat, because I'll travel anywhere to.
It is pretty confusing when you describe it that way. Greg, I want to give you a chance to join the conversation in a moment and see if there's anything that you would add to that, and maybe from your perspective, being from a different part of the world, different generation, and a different stripe of the global church as well. Before I turn it over to you, though, brother, I do want to mention, if you're watching us on YouTube, something is different in this studio. If you're listening on audio, you'll just have to use your imagination or log on to YouTube. But I finally have in my hands here, guys, the new Puritan Treasures for Today series, all 15 volumes from Reformation Heritage Books. The one in my hand right now is Contentment, Prosperity, and God's Glory, edited and made understandable and accessible. This is part of Jeremiah Burrow's great work, The Rare Jewel of Christian Contentment. But if you're someone who has, like me, honestly tried to pick up the Puritans, make sense of them, and has had limited success, but just senses that there's so much more value there that can be unearthed, this series makes the work of men like Jeremiah Burroughs and John Owen and Flavel and Burgess and others, it makes their work accessible. And because they're partnering with ABWE, as a way of saying thanks, they are providing a special discount code. And so we extend our gratitude to them as well. And if you go to heritagebooks.org/Puritan Treasures, again, that's heritagebooks.org/Puritan Treasures. If you use the code MissionsPod, all one word, all capital letters, MissionsPod, you'll get a special discount when you use that code when you order. And folks, I love just the feel of these little volumes. I mean, they're easy. They could probably fit in your pocket if they needed to. They feel good. The print quality is exceptional. They're short. They're digestible and so deep and readable. And that's what we need. And I think it's even relevant to this conversation, is familiarizing ourselves with what the church has said throughout history on so many different topics. And so check them out over at heritagebooks.org. And I'll turn it back over to you, Greg. What would you add? Why is it that we don't hear kind of our side of the theological aisle talking about the Jewish people in this way? Is it just because we're spending too much time on the formerly known as Twitter bird app X?
No, I think that there's certainly a reality in the sense that it's just not something that's spoken about that often. And the diversity of actual views, theological views on Israel. And you know, when we use the term Israel, even, we almost have to qualify it. And I've recently gone through a couple of weeks of sessions in my church where we just discuss, what is the church? What is Israel? How do we think through these two things? What do we mean when we say the word Israel in conversation? Because you have to parse that out. Are we speaking of it in terms of the geopolitical entity that is Israel in the Middle East right now? Are we speaking of, as Stephen has been speaking of it for the most part in this conversation, as an ethnic group of people, or something else entirely? Are we speaking of it in the theological fulfillment of Jesus Christ or something to that effect, right? So we have to think those things through. And unfortunately, I just think that most of us didn't grow up in an environment where those conversations happened. So you asked me a little bit earlier before the break there about my own perspective and my own upbringing in these, and a different generation. And really and truly, I grew up in your average Southern Baptist dispensational kind of church where I would hear one viewpoint on this. And it was not a viewpoint that I hold currently, certainly. And it's something that I've had to evolve on over time. Many of us were involved with, you know, for better or worse, the Young Reformed and Restless movement that's moved us from where we were into much more of a Reformed understanding of things. And certainly Christian Witness to Israel has very much, it's right there on the front of our webpage, a Reformed heritage. And so we're not shy about that. But for me, coming out of that kind of a background and moving into a new positions on these things, it's something you had to wrestle with. We all want to claim Charles Spurgeon. We all want to love that Charles Spurgeon has been such a wonderful influence and preacher. And yet, you know, when you read a quote from him that says, "I imagine that you cannot read the Bible without seeing clearly that there is to be an actual restoration of the children of Israel," we have to kind of work out, well, what does that mean then? How do we understand a restoration of Israel? Mm-hmm. And so because of the complexities of the conversation and because of the complexities, even with the theology of it, I mean, you'll talk to even very good conservative and Reformed scholars, in particular in the Baptist world, who won't really deal with it as heavily because they really and truly believe in somewhat more of a supersessionist view of what Israel is in the church. And so we have to sort of figure, that's another part of the conversation, I imagine, that we haven't even touched on.
Yeah. And Greg, for our listeners real quick too, just define supersessionist, define that term for our listeners.
Yeah. Just simply the idea that the church has replaced Israel. You know, there's been a charge of replacement theology cast from a dispensational camp onto more of the Reformed camp. Anyone who believes in a covenant theology that sees the church as maybe a continuation of some sort of Israel and the old covenant. And so when we say supersessionism, what we're saying is that there's an actual replacement. It's not a continuation, but there is a full replacement. And for some theological reason or another, whether it be that Israel has become accursed in some way, or simply that it means that God has now chosen to work through the church during this period of time. There's other things. I'm sure Stephen could add more to that
idea. Yeah, before you do, Stephen, let me speak to that, because you touched on something, Greg, that I was about to bring up, which is I could put on a dispensational hat and argue this is the church age, this is the age of grace, and so we should be focused on the Gentile mission. Or I could put on a covenantal hat and argue the church has replaced Israel, we should focus on the Gentile mission. I could actually argue either way, not to make Jewish evangelism the focus and sort of just leave it to the sovereignty of God if and when and how he would restore those people. So, Stephen, what would you say is the key then to showing people, no, we actually have to pursue Jewish evangelism as a global church? Maybe not every individual, every church is going to be doing something in that particular area, but the church, capital C, has to care about Jewish evangelism, should have a strategy and a directed energy towards that. What would you say the key is to helping people to realize we can't just consign ourselves to only focusing on all of the other ethne, other people groups, with the exclusion of this one?
Okay, give me the easy question then. Yes.
Yes, you're welcome.
I would answer that under three headings, if I can do it as briefly as possible.
As long as they alliterate, brother.
No, don't. I would answer it under, let's go to the Bible. I would say then, let's go to church history. And then let's look at the contemporary scene that we have in the USA, where 42% of the world's Israel resides. 6 million Jewish people are living here, and that's no accident. That's a providence of God. So taking it from the Bible, the church began in Genesis. That's my understanding. It didn't begin in Acts 2. The church began in Genesis. The early church, the early ecclesia, was Jewish. And therefore, the separating, the Israel and the church just doesn't make sense to me at all. It was remnant Israel, a handful of believers that then became thousands and then became tens of thousands of Jewish believers in the first 5, 10, 15, 20 years of the church, when a few Gentiles were getting stuck on, unnaturally so, according to Romans 11. The church was Jewish for the first couple of decades. Mm-hmm. And so I think we need to, again, theologically get that into our heads, because sometimes we get the impression that at the day of Pentecost, there were all these nations of the world all came together and the gospel was poured out on the Gentile nations and they went off and left all the Jews behind. It was Pentecost. It was Shavuot. It was a Jewish festival. And that Jewish fisherman preached from the Jewish book. And Jewish people repented and believed in the gospel. So again, theological issues, we live in a day when the narratives are being skewed all over the place with regard to history, with regard to life, with regard to identity. And so we need, again, to clarify the confusion. So we would do that by Bible, by preaching, by teaching. We've got a ton of resources on our website. Thank you, Greg, for placing it all up there. I have a 20-week series called the AC course, which is the Awakening the Conscience course. There's 20 lectures / sermons on our website that give Bible history and contemporary reality before us. Quick one on the history. We mentioned replacement theology there. I believe that replacement theology began in the second century, if not the first century. And as the church became increasingly Roman, and let's say maybe even increasingly Roman Catholic, Jewish people were persecuted, quite frankly. And so we have the Crusades, the Inquisition, the Holocaust. Hitler was a Catholic. And so Jewish evangelism is difficult because they see the church as having persecuted Israel. The Catholic Church definitely saw itself as the replacement of Israel because they had a new priestcraft and they had a new sacrifice. So why do we need Israel anymore? But immediately we come to the Reformation. Again, if I can really conflate the story, but from the Reformation, we have Martin Luther immediately taking an interest in the Jewish people. Why was that? Why did Luther immediately write in his early writings that Jesus Christ was born a Jew? That's Martin Luther's early writings. Now, having said that, we all know Martin Luther's later writings that on the Jews and their lies, von den Juden und ihren Lügen, and that 60,000 word vitriol against the Jewish people was later used by Hitler and others. But fast forward through that, and you've got Calvin starting to interact with the Hebrews, actually interact with the Hebrew language. And further on from that, as the Reformation was reformed and reforming, we have more and more interaction with the Jewish people. Calvin's successors were praying every Lord's Day for Jewish redemption. Mm-hmm. The Dutch church, I'll hold up a booklet that we've reprinted that Joel Beakey was very happy to let us reprint. I'm delighted to have that friendship with Dr. Beakey. But a brocco on the redemption of the Jewish people, that's all on our website as well. So in the 1600s, in the further or deeper Reformation in Holland, there was that prayer for and longing, which again, fast forward into the 1700s, 1800s, became the Puritan hope. This is our Reformed heritage. I spoke some time ago at a mega church not too far from here. I'll not name it, but several pastors. And after talking about what I was doing, why I was here, the question came to me, when did Presbyterians get interested in Israel? And I started to give them a history lesson. And they then kept silent a little after that. And they just said, oh, okay, right. And to my mind, Reformed theology, and then in my camp, the Presbyterians were at the forefront of Jewish mission. And the sad reality for me is that there has been this confusion by multiple theologies that has led, and as you've said, distracted us away from what is historic Reformed theology towards the ancient people. And it's focused on their redemption. So it's focused on the gospel. And that's really where CWI North America's focus is, bringing the gospel to the ancient people, and particularly here in the USA. Mm.
I want to turn a corner here. First, just point of order. I don't know if you want to dispute this, but well, it's our show, so I'm going to do it. I mean, I do want to say on the record, Adolf Hitler, fundamentally a pagan, an environmental pagan, God hater. I don't want to brand him as a Roman Catholic. Yes, baptized into the Roman Catholic Church, technically, but I want to draw a distinction there. I'm sure, you know, there's lots of...
The only thing I would counter with that is that the Jewish people don't make that distinction.
Well, and that's true. I mean, here's the other thing. This is an obstacle, actually. This leads into my next question. I mean, I don't know to what extent our Jewish friends would make any distinction among Catholic, Protestant, you know, Orthodox. I mean, from their perspective, we've just been their persecutors for the last 2,000 years. Mm-hmm. And I think we can go into the history and say, well, that's not always exactly the case. And you gave some good examples of that not being the case, particularly among the Puritans and the Reformed and the post-Reformed. But maybe talk to me today then, Stephen. This really gets at, you know, the Jewish mind today. Are you finding openness to the gospel today, especially after the events of October 2023, the equivalent of, I don't know how many 9/11s for them statistically on their population in the nation of Israel alone, but just the Jewish mind today as it appears in North America and across the world, is there openness to the gospel? Is there more closed offness to the gospel? And what does it actually look like then practically hosting these conversations today when, yeah, that the furor, the potential for disagreement has never been higher?
We often say that Jewish people are just like everyone else, only more so. In other words, it's the same gospel, same need, same response even. The indifference to the gospel that we find among the Gentile world is no different in the Jewish world, only it might be even more intense. Because they are an intense people, and they often, my Jewish believing colleague in Pittsburgh, he will talk of Jewish paranoia. And again, that is understandable in the current climate. They are fearful. But this is a wonderful opportunity for the church to exhibit what I would see as Romans 11:28, where they are loved on account of the patriarchs. We, whatever we think of the Jewish people, however we may engage with them, the scriptures tell us that they are a loved people on account of the patriarchs. Now, they're enemies on account of the gospel. Same verse. They are not saved. There's no back door into heaven, but they are loved on account of the patriarchs. And therefore, we have an opportunity today in the current anti-Semitic climate to show that love of Christ. And indeed, Romans 11:31 says that we are to show them mercy by the mercy that we have received. So it's a reciprocal thing. We got it from them. And so we are to bring it back and show them the mercy that we have received from them.
Greg, what would you add to that?
Not a lot, other than to say that I think that many of us, maybe even more so in the, I don't know if I want to say conservative or more reformed camp, but those kinds of circles, I suppose, have downplayed that ability for Jewish people to be grafted in again. Really and truly, if we want to trust in what Romans 11 has very fairly clearly revealed, in my opinion, that they are the natural branches, and that there is something about that that gives them an opportunity, though hardened, certainly, in very particular ways, and on account of you know, the history of redemption, there is still a real sense in which they are able to be grafted in again. It's not just it's how much more so can the natural branches be brought back in. It's not just if you have been shown favor, then you know, you get to keep it to yourself and you get to do whatever you like, and that's fine. Just leave it alone. And you know, you shouldn't expect that any other groups that may have been hardened, this group that's cast off, no, they won't be brought back in again. No, the fact is, Paul very clearly says that because they are the natural branches, they are able to be grafted in again. And so there's a real sense of ontology there to recognize that an ethnically Jewish person has the ability, just as every one of us does as a Gentile, to be grafted into this tree, and maybe even more so. I wouldn't say that theologically, but that's kind of
in a certain sense. Yeah. Cause the things of God belong to them,
right?
You know, historically, in the sense that Paul talks about, right? The prophets and so forth.
If I can just add to what Greg has said, because it Greg has brought up a very important point of that, the natural branches of Romans 11. I think sometimes in the theological discussion that we might have, I find even some of my Reformed brethren, as we've kind of inferred or hinted at, that sometimes there's a belief that God's done with Israel, God's finished with Israel. Good people disagree on this. Lloyd Jones disagreed with Hendrickson. I believe Lloyd Jones was right, and I believe John Murray was right, and Hodge was right, and so I could go on with others.
Not to stack the deck or anything,
I think there is this sense that God is finished with Israel. Well, if we have a Calvinist understanding of the workings of God, then God doesn't just ditch us because we mess up. How many times have I messed up in my life? If God is done with Israel because they messed up, then we're in dangerous waters. But because I believe in God's faithfulness to his covenant with unfaithful me, with sinning me, then I can believe that God is faithful to his irrevocable promises towards the ancient people. How that plays out, how it all works, I don't know. And I actually don't need to know. I don't need to have that gnosis. It seems to me we have a modern Gnosticism that wants to have the secret of Ezekiel mixed in with a little Daniel, and we'll bring in Revelation. And Greg is preaching on Revelation, so I'm waiting on hearing all the answers from Greg as he continues his series on the book of Revelation. But it seems to me that there's a fascination to have the knowledge, to have the gnosis.
Yeah.
And yet we don't need to know. It's a mystery. Yeah. But God is able to graft them in again. So let's be about the master's business.
Well, brothers, I want to continue this into the overtime segment, and specifically in the overtime segment, I mean, we've only touched on the contemporary controversy, but there's a lot of question right now, even when we talk about something like anti-Semitism. What do we really mean by that? And can someone question aspects of Jewish influence or identity, and is that valid or not? And all, frankly, I see a lot of believers in Christ wrestling with these same questions. And so I think we've got to have good biblical, theological, and missiological answers to them. And so I want to do that in our bonus segment, which, by the way, you can get if you join our premium subscriber crew at missionspodcast.com/premium. But let me give you both just this to close our main interview time. I don't know that I heard this in your last response, and forgive me if you shared this already, but are you seeing that that the Jews that you're and your people are ministering to right now, are they receptive in general? Are you seeing more receptivity or less? Yes, they're like anyone else, right? And the Spirit can regenerate them and give them the eyes of faith. But are you seeing doors opening, or are you seeing like, you know, we've been doing this however many years and it's actually gotten a little bit harder over the last 6 months or 12 months? What does that look like for you? And then would you just also just do us a favor of telling us how we can hear more from you and where we can find your website and any other links that you would direct us to?
I'll let Greg do that last one and the former one. Simply to say that it's still a difficult mission field. They have experienced a hardening in part. That's what the scriptures say. So bringing that message is a difficult one. And you will have mixed responses. You will have the rabbis who will argue with us in the streets, and I've been there in the midst of it, and it's got hot and heavy. You will have other people that are very, very kind and amenable, and you'll have those who actually ultimately will take our literature, and some even have come to faith, and we praise the Lord for that because salvation is of the Lord. So it really is the mix of that. I would simply say also just in the land of Israel, maybe we can talk about this a little more in the next segment as well. But with my colleague in Israel, we have been engaging in mercy ministries. He is pastor of Grace and Truth Baptist, Reformed Baptist Congregation, just a suburb of Tel Aviv. And he's doing a wonderful work there. And we've been actually sending some funds to assist in the mercy ministry there in the midst of the war. And it's been wonderful just to see, he himself would say, of how much openness there has been. As they have been helping the displaced, particularly the northern families who have been displaced by the Hezbollah rockets, and doing various things in that mercy ministry. So there is an openness, but ultimately it is the work of God. And therefore we pray. You know, I waved the Spurgeon one, and with this I really will close and pass over to Greg. But I waved the Spurgeon one there. That's on Ezekiel 37. You know the story, the Valley of Dry Bones. Spurgeon sees that as the bones of the house of Israel. Preach to the bones and pray for the wind. That's it in a nutshell. And so we will preach to the bones in the streets or in friendships or whatever situation we may find ourselves speaking to Jewish people. Preach to the bones. But we want your listeners to pray for the wind, because if we believe what we believe pertaining to Jewish redemption, it is the work of God. And we pray that the Spirit of God would blow upon the preached word of God and bring that new life.
Amen.
Yeah. And I would just, I mean, just as a quick word of addition to that, you know, we also are noticing, I think, in my opinion, and this is just from my limited perspective from behind my screen as I work as a media director, but certainly I think, and some actually being out and about at some conferences and things like that, I think we are seeing an increase in the, at least the American church's ability and desire to have these conversations. I mean, we're sitting here in a podcast talking about these very topics, and I think that it's becoming more and more pertinent and relevant to today. And so our job at CWI is to assist churches, to resource them, and then to mobilize them. And that's really our goal. And so where you find us, you know, you've asked us where you can find us. You can find us on the streets. You know, you can find Stephen and Mitch when they go out into the various city outreaches that we've done in places like Denver and Cleveland and New Jersey. And I'm missing others that you've done, Stephen. But certainly you can go on our website and find more information and reports about those kinds of things. You can find those lecture series that Stephen was hinting at earlier on that kind of link to our YouTube video, as well as other articles and blogs that we've written. We want to resource the church to be able to have these conversations and have them in a way that honors Christ, really, at the end of the day. So you can find our website at CWINA, Christian Witness to Israel, North America, .org. And then also one other thing that I would note is that we've also begun very recently, kind of my big project actually recently, has been to set up a new website that is designed for Jewish seekers. And so for the Christian who is discussing these things with a Jewish friend or family member, then they are able to point them to this website, shalom3131.com. And shalom3131.com has a lot of resources, great questions and videos that we've been putting up. And we want people to be able to go there and just get a good idea. Yeah, Stephen's pulling up the shirts that we made. I'm actually wearing one under here myself.
If you're not watching this episode on YouTube, you are really missing out, because there have been so many props all episode long. Yeah, that's a great shirt.
There's your YouTube
That's right. Shalom 3131.com for your Jewish seeker friends, and CWINA.org. Brothers, thank you both. And we will pick up this conversation in our bonus segment for our premium subscribers. But to the rest of you, thank you for joining us. Before you go, make sure you leave this podcast a positive rating and review in your podcast platform of choice. That'll help other people discover this content and be blessed by it. The Missions Podcast is a ministry of ABWE.org. To learn more about ABWE, go to ABWE's website and take your next step in the Great Commission. To get more content from us, go to missionspodcast.com, and we'll see you in our next episode. Until then, go make disciples of all the nations, including Israel. Take care.